For the first portion of this, I'm going to use this vastly underused resource here, which is, I don't really know what the name of it is, but look at how awesome this is. How am I not going to use this? Come on, step up here, and of course, close the little door to indicate that this is not egalitarian here. There's the speaker, and there's the rest of you folks. So, all right, well, I'm running a little experiment tonight. I'm going to have a little wine as this goes. Now, I have a very, very low alcohol tolerance level. My wife can attest to this. You see? But I just thought, to make this interesting for you guys, let's just see what... It would be just another variable, okay? Now, of course, in order for this to take effect, I am going to have to drink it like a Philistine, so you'll see me gulping it down. But anyway, what I'm going to do tonight is something a little bit different from what I've done in the past at this thing. The Institute for the past few years has been inserting into your program this thing called An Evening with Tom Woods, and they don't tell me what it is that they want me to do. And I think the first time they did it because I hadn't given them a topic, so they thought, all right, this deadbeat isn't going to reply when we ask him for a topic. We'll stick it to him. We'll just give him no topic at all and then watch him flounder out there. So I wound up talking 2 years ago about my little story, because we all have a story, right? How we got here, how you got to Auburn, Alabama, talking about these sorts of things. So I told that, and I was kind of happy with how that came out. So then last year I thought, I got to do something different. And each time I do this, the next day, or the day after Mises U is over, I think to myself, I have a whole year to think up something new and interesting to do on The Evening with Tom Woods. And then, of course, as you know, I think about nothing but this nonstop for the next year until the day before the thing comes, and I say, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So last year, I talked for a little while, and then we went out into the audience, and we took questions, but specifically, we were asking, what are the objections that you guys encounter most often? And let's see if we can respond to them together. And that was great because a lot of you faculty folks were in here. And when I didn't know the answer, which was more often than not, I could just punt it, you know, hey, Roderick Long knows about this. Or maybe there's some situation in which somebody else might know something. And it all turned out great. So, yeah, and Roderick said, no, there's no way he would know the answer to something. Okay, well, so now what I want to do is something that's altogether different. You notice there are three seats that are not yet taken. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's going to be the triumvirate. It's going to be Lou Rockwell, the judge, and Ron Paul coming out. No. None of those people will be sitting in these seats in the next hour. Or probably during the week. I mean, of course, you know, Lou and the judge will be here tomorrow. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's good, good. We want that kind of enthusiasm. Okay, and by the way, that'll be me after I finish this class here. All right, so what I want to do, though, tonight is talk to a few people here who are going to help you navigate through this week. And also, I want to talk about some of the topics that are of interest to you guys. And the way I'm doing this is I'm going to bring up a couple people. We're going to sit over here and chit-chat about, well, you'll see the topics. But the third figure I'm going to have come up is a guy you love, we all love, it's impossible not to love, and that's Walter Block. We're going to have Walter. Walter's going to be part of this. And the reason Walter's going to be part of this is that, as you all know, Walter's an economist. He's got a distinguished scholar chair. He's written 800 gazillion articles. And, in fact, the opportunity cost of his being here is like 5 articles. So we're very grateful to have him with us. When I co-authored an article with him years ago, I really felt like a major milestone had been reached in my career. But Walter is known, in addition to being an economist, as being somebody who is an excellent theorist on libertarian questions, or at the very least, somebody you would go to when you're stumped on some question. Or if you have some oddball, out there sort of objection, Walter is the guy who will answer. And you'll always see, you'll see throughout the week that in between sessions or at night, you'll see a circle of people somewhere in this room, and it'll be Walter talking. And all the students go, oh, yeah. Okay, so we're going to give you a little preview of that tonight. So the sort of question that I want you to ask Walter is not like, how did you get interested in economics? No, we're just going to throw that in the garbage. You're going to ask him that privately. I want to challenge Walter, right? We want to challenge this guy, right? And we're going to challenge him with questions like, I mean, this is just an example. This is the sort of thing Walter just knows. Suppose we woke up one day and half the petunias suddenly were rational. So then the question would be, would 100% of the petunias be entitled to rights now? Now, not only does Walter know the answer, he has 5 articles on the rational petunia question. All of them co-authored, of course, with one of them with a petunia, I understand. All right. Yeah, one of the rational ones. All right. So, but here's what I'm going to do. To maximize our time together, this paper, this is special. It looks like ordinary paper to you guys. This is special Walter Block question paper. So I'm going to send it around, and if you want to ask Walter a question, you take one of these pieces of paper and you write your question down. And then when I say, all right, I'm taking the questions, around 7, like halfway through, you're going to pass all these questions up to here, and, you know, then in a little while, we'll have him answer them. And that'll be great, okay? So think, what could I ask Walter? What could I ask this guy? Because he's going to be mobbed by people. Maybe you're a shy person. Here's your chance to ask what you want to ask. Now, I wanted to bring another faculty person up here. I wanted to bring you, Jeff, but you refused. That's okay. You're tired. That's all right. I wanted to bring David Gordon up here. Because the thing about David Gordon is he knows everything. And you think I'm joking. You think, well, okay, yeah, he's a smart guy, whatever. It's ridiculous how much this guy knows. Talk to him privately. If there's some question in philosophy or history or intellectual history or economics that you're interested in, ask him about it. Or ask, well, what can I read on such and such topic? Or I'm pursuing this research avenue. What can I do? I do this constantly. I saved up a couple questions on Aristotle to ask him while I was down here. Because it's ridiculous. And in fact, I listened to him give a talk once, and this has happened numerous times. He's talking about Aristotle, and he references an article in the Review of Metaphysics by Roderick here. And off the top of his head, with no notes, he also knows the page numbers. Like, that's not, like, normal. So I wanted to have him come up here for Stump David Gordon. And he's too modest to do it, I think. Because you can't stump him, right? Where would the fun in that have been? How could I have given out prizes? So maybe I'll persuade him to do that next year. But I just want you to have a sense, though, before we go on, of how extraordinary a group of people they really are, these folks who are going to spend a lot of time with you this week, and you're going to be very impressed by them. Now, speaking of Walter Block and spending time, after this session is over, there's a kind of an oddball item in your schedule. There is a chess match scheduled between Walter and me, and the origin of that is a couple years ago, some of the graduate student fellows here had a chess tournament, and I was the only American in the tournament. It was 6 or 7 people plus me, and they were all Europeans or something. And like all Americans, I have an inferiority complex vis-a-vis Europeans. I feel like they're always smarter than I am, and I'm not worthy to stand in their presence. And so I was very nervous about being in this chess tournament. And the first game of the tournament, I lost ignominiously. And I thought, well, that just goes to show I'm terrible at this. I have no business being in this tournament. Then I ended up winning every single game in the rest of the tournament, and I won. So, of course, you know me. I went around the Institute chanting, USA, USA. And so we decided, without really consulting him, that the winner would play against Walter, who's a good chess player. So 2 years ago, Walter beat me. So then, of course, we had a rematch last year, and I beat him. Interestingly, the only one of these two games that's on YouTube is the one that I won. I don't know how that happened, but you can find it on YouTube. So tonight, given that we've each won one game, tonight is like, this is it, right? This is it. I mean, which one of us is the man and which one of us is the goat is going to be decided right here before you. And you may say, I don't really fancy watching a chess game. It is optional, but I'm telling you, you're going to be drawn to it. There's an excitement. There's an electricity in the room. As a matter of fact, I forgot. I was supposed to go up and get my chess clock. We're playing 20 minutes aside, and that's it. All right, so having said all that, let's see. Is there anything else I want to say? Yeah, I do want to say one more thing before I bring up my first person. My first person is two people. That's why we've got the three seats here. I have a brother-in-law who's here. I'm not going to identify him so that you guys don't pester him the whole time and ask him questions. We'll let him absorb this on his own. So, in fact, I won't even look in his general direction. I'll just go like this. But just for his sake, I want to sort of just explain, like in 2 minutes, what it is that we're all about, what it is that we're doing here. And so I kind of did that last night, but the Institute is centered around the Austrian School of Economics. You guys all know that. But the insight that I was trying to ram home last night in the talk was that as libertarians, we more or less believe that society runs itself without the need for some external force, as I call it, a guy with a bullhorn shouting out orders at everybody, that we don't need that, that's superfluous, society just runs itself. Well, the economy can run itself, is what you notice when you read Man, Economy, and State by Murray Rothbard. It's a long book, and you notice that chapter after chapter, he's building this beautiful edifice of economics from beginning from one isolated person, Robinson Crusoe, and then continuing on to two people, and then building up into a sophisticated modern economy. And all this time, there is no role for a guy with a bullhorn. In other words, a politician telling people what to do or taxing people or shifting resources around. He's utterly superfluous to the whole process. And then at the end of the book, you see that when he does come along, all he can do is screw up the process. And so this is very counterintuitive because we're inclined to think, because we're raised on what I call this military metaphor, that if you want to get things done, you need some guy in charge of everything. And yet it's astonishing how much gets accomplished. For example, all economic activity can be accomplished without some guy with a hangman's noose and a gun and threats of imprisonment and taxation. It just happens, and this is astonishing. And then the other part of it is the Institute itself is named after, it's not called the Austrian Economics Institute, it's named after Ludwig von Mises to honor him and his work in particular, because not only was he a great scholar, but he was a great hero in the way he lived his life. This is a guy who, when he's, 31 years old, he writes a treatise on the theory of money and credit that if you were to read today, you would say, well, this actually does help to account for why we're in the terrible economic mess we're in today. And he wrote it 100 years ago. Or the guy has to flee from the Nazis in 1940, coming all the way to the United States with his wife, almost empty-handed, in his late 50s. And you would think, well, that's going to be the end of his career there. I mean, how's he going to start a whole new academic career when he's almost 60? In a foreign country, I mean, he spoke some English, but when he would write books, Henry Hazlitt had to help with it. And yet, he has the most productive phase of his whole career at that time, and he absolutely refuses to concede anything. He's fighting against the whole tide of world history at that point, which is all centered around the idea of state intervention into the economy. And he's saying, the intervention is going to make the problems that you're trying to solve worse. The cure is worse than the disease. And he's been completely vindicated because we're living through the end of a business cycle whose ups and downs can be accounted for by theories that he pioneered. And while almost everybody else who taught at his university has been long forgotten, we have the Ludwig von Mises Institute and all you guys, and it turns out we could only accept less than 1/3 of all the applicants, of all people who want to come here during their summer and spend a whole week learning what this guy was teaching. That's really astonishing. And so that's why I'm so excited to have a chance to be here. Okay, so here are our first people. Oh, okay, wait. I have not kept up to my end of this bargain.
We'll carry you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I'm now going to leave my privileged enclave here and move over to the seats. Here we go. So the first couple people I want to bring up are people who are going to be entertaining you later in the week. Now, you may have noticed on the schedule that there is provision made for a concert on Friday night. And you may think, well, this is something I wasn't expecting at an economics conference, but I'm game for anything. Good, that's just the right attitude. Let me tell you what the wrong attitude is. Well, gee, it's 11 o'clock, and I got to be in bed by then. No, you are retroactively rejected from Mises University, if that's your thinking. No. This is, I don't want to say it's the highlight of the week, because then that'll make the professors feel bad, but it's an awesome part of the week. Because this band is fronted by two people who are 100% Misesians. So like they go from show to show and they're listening to Mises Institute podcasts. So I thought, I'm not going to get a chance to talk to people like this all that often. So I would like to welcome Matt and Pacey Harris up here. So come on up here. Fun. All right. Hey, all right. Good to see you. Okay. Hey, great to see you. Okay. All right. Okay. So let's see. Yeah. Why don't you sit here and then we'll chit chat. Okay. So this is your microphone. You guys can share this one. There we go. All right.
How do you use this?
Yeah, exactly. You're pretty familiar with how this works. All right. So first of all, we'll get into the Austrian stuff in a minute, but tell us about your band. It's called Fly By Radio. So what makes it so awesome? See, I'm such an incisive interviewer, right?
He makes it awesome. Well, we try to do a big production, and we do classic rock. We play stuff that everybody knows, so it's a lot of fun.
The reason it's fun
high energy.
Everybody comes out from the instant. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Gotta get closer.
Yeah.
What makes it fun for you guys is Bob Murphy comes up and does a little lead vocals, and I don't know if anybody knows, but I mean he's also a karaoke superstar. So live band karaoke with Bob Murphy.
Yeah, but no lyrics, Bob. So.
Yeah. It's a little more pressure, so y'all cut them some slack. But we've done it 2 years in a row, and it's always a good time. Mm-hmm.
Now, what I like about get that. Yeah, so what I like about you guys is that you look at them, right? They say they're lovely people, right? And soft spoken and sweet. Wait till you see them Friday night. It's like they're completely different people. that just knocked my socks off. And then, like to me, like. What's weird is that you guys come to the Mises Institute and you're saying that, from your point of view, the Mises faculty are like superstars for you guys. But then, like in the intermission of your show, and you guys came up to the VIP section where we were all sitting, I sort of thought like, yeah, I know these people. Yeah. I mean, so
it was a big deal for us when we first came, and we've been driving around a lot, listening to a lot of Mises podcasts because we'll be on the road for several hours at a time, and I'm just hearing Floyd Lilly talking to my ear, and then we come and meet her, and it's just, you hear that voice, and I'm just like, you've been reading to me for
she does
for
a lot months. Of audiobooks.
Right? Yeah, I love it. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know, meeting everybody here for the first time has been amazing, but, we have it set up where, how's everybody getting in? Everybody gets in for free.
Yeah, we'll figure out some way. We usually do bracelets.
We do something like that. Where, anyway, everybody's invited. Y'all come out if you want to.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's great. All right, so now, why don't we have you tell people why it is that in this particular show you will be opening with some songs and closing with some songs, but not doing all the vocal work this time?
I'm retiring. I'm going to have a baby on Thanksgiving Day. So this will be my last show in Auburn. Thank you. we're married. We've been married for a long time.
What is interesting about that, and I just thought of this earlier, I remember when I first kind of got introduced in Austrian economics. A lot of people, it's different books. For me, it was Economics in One Lesson. And I was listening to the an audiobook, and I was like standing in my fence, and it took like 5 hours, so I had that thing running. And I remember it just opened my eyes, but I ran inside, and I was like, Pacey, I want our kids to understand this stuff. And this was like 5 years ago, you know? And so it's just kind of, just because I know it's the truth, and so it just, I don't know. I'm just kind of happy to have someone, you know, a new part of our family, and I've just kind of always wanted them to understand this, I guess.
Yeah. The way we got into Austrian economics, my dad is Austrian but doesn't know it, you know, and so he's explaining to us how our monetary system works, and we're like, well, really? We got to research this a little further, and it led us to the Mises Institute, and then to Ron Paul, and then everybody, and it just snowballed from there, and it's, you guys, before we met you guys, y'all are already famous to us because we watch you all the time. Isn't it weird?
That is totally weird, yes.
But you guys know what I mean.
So how long have you guys been performing?
Oh, 11 years. Yeah, 11 years. We've been together for 11 years and married for 5 and been performing the whole time.
Now, what about the rest of the band? Do they think you're a little eccentric or just don't
weird.
Talk to them about this stuff? Or?
Yeah, they think we're weird. We've tried.
You know how it goes when you have the talk, the free market talk, and then it doesn't work, but you're still around that person. And then certain topics come up, like this week, hey, Detroit's bankrupt. They're like, how's a city go bankrupt? I'm like, I don't know, you know? We've had the talk. So, yeah, it's a little, it's different, you know, traveling with somebody after having the talk. Y'all know.
I'm sure we get on their nerves at times. Everything leads to an economic conversation sometimes.
We were on their nerves during the Ron Paul campaign, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, I want you to explain to me what you told me some time ago about how the lighting works in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like you've got some incredible lighting team that comes along with you.
Oh,
but it turns out that that's an illusion.
Yeah, we have a whole self-contained light show. It's because we're like an 80s cover band, hence the hair, but... So it's all kind of ran from the stage. So if you see this crazy light show going on, it's just me running it with my feet, you know, while I'm playing guitar. And we do all sorts of parties and stuff, so we kind of have to.
Yeah, so he's playing guitar, and he's also doing the lights.
And he's running sound and wearing spandex and eyeliner.
Wow. I thought I'd leave some things for them to discover on their own.
They need a warning.
Right. So now you've had Bob come up the past 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, and
right.
this is so great because half the people in there are just regular Auburn goers.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea why the rest of us are cheering like crazy for Bob.
Right, yeah. Mosh pitting here in Sweet Caroline.
Yeah. So you don't have to give anything away, but is there anything planned for this year?
He's going
to
do it again, yeah.
Can't say what song.
Yeah.
Oh, can't say what song, okay. Nice. Nice. All right, what else can we talk about?
I practiced during karaoke tonight. No.
All right, what's the most insane performing story you have? Crazy venue or the stage collapses or, you know, you lost a limb or something. Like what have you got?
We can't talk about it, I don't think.
Oh, that's the best kind. Have a glass of wine like me. You'll be blah, blah, blah before
We've
you
seen
know
people
it.
That have had way too many glasses of wine. And,
It's your shows, you mean?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know anybody like that.
Oh gosh, let me think. I don't know.
We gotta pass.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to pass on that.
Oh, okay. All right, fair enough.
There's a girl out there that her haircut and outfit is out of style now. From the pictures that were going around.
Oh, I see.
Too much wine.
Yeah, you guys take pictures of the crowd and post them on your site.
Oh yeah, but not bad ones. This was someone else.
Okay.
Right, yeah, we take pictures of every show and put them online so you guys get out there and get nuts and you'll be on our website forever.
But like you guys, like from the stage, like you were promoting the Mises Institute. Like again, these are a lot of drunk Auburn students, and we're all cheering, so they start cheering. Like whatever the heck this thing is, I'm in favor of it.
Got my Rothbard tie on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Matt is wearing, but Matt has a stage persona that goes by another name. But Matt is wearing his Rothbard enemy of the state shirt while playing guitar. You can do that this.
It's a very
time.
Rock and roll shirt.
Yeah, it's totally a rock shirt.
That's the best shirt.
Yeah,
I love it. So yeah, I wear it. We're at a pretty good bit, but always for Mises.
Yeah.
For Mises,
yeah. That's really great. That's really great. Well, listen, you guys are great. Everybody's going to be there, right? We're all going? Yay! All right. Thank you, guys. All right. Good. All right. During this transition moment, we will have a little wine. Okay. Now for my next trick. Now for the next my next guest is our friend. Let me introduce him for you, Patrick Newman. Now, let me tell you who Patrick Newman is. So he's just graduated from Rutgers University, and he's going to be starting a PhD program in the fall. Okay, good. In economics, and he is the winner of the first place prize in the oral exam last year. So that means he walked out of here with 2,500 big ones. So he's a guy you want to get to know because you want to find out a little inside story about how did he do this, right? What is this thing like? How did you win that kind of dough? Well, Patrick Newman, it is your turn to come on up here. So let's do some chit-chatting. All right, thanks. All right, good. Oh, yeah, let's start. Moving your questions for Walter. Pass them down this way. Questions for Walter. You definitely got some. And I bet some of you actually want to ask him that petunia question, don't you? If half the petunias become rational, do all 100% of them get rights? If we get nothing else, I'm asking him that. All right, so anyway. Oh, we're awfully close, aren't we?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, actually, you can have this.
Oh. Thank you.
Okay, so all right, so Patrick wins the prize, right? $2,500. Now, let me just start off by saying that one thing we've noticed over the years is that with the internet growing and the website growing, we get students coming to this program now who are much more knowledgeable about Austrian economics than students used to be in the past because they've read all the materials online, they're knowledgeable about it. And we've had cases in some exams where the student has been so intelligent that the faculty has basically said, this person should be on this side of the table with us asking the questions. Like, we get people that bright. Patrick wasn't one of those, but he was very impressive because you were an undergrad at the time, right?
Yeah.
So this, yeah, he's an undergrad, and he wins the prize where everybody is eligible to be in it. Well, not everybody. The faculty's excluded, but the grad students are eligible, and this undergrad won it, and he escaped with his life. But what was – okay, first of all, we start off with this written test, okay? If you you've been paying attention and studying the stuff, you should be okay on the written test.
Yeah.
Now the written test thing, though, if you don't pass through to the next round, to the oral part, that doesn't mean you failed the test. It means that they have to have a cutoff. Like, it has to be, if it's 20 questions, and we have a whole bunch of people who got 17 or more, then 17 or more is going to be the cutoff. So if you got 16, that doesn't mean you failed. It just means that other people did better. So you shouldn't go home saying, I'm the worst person ever. I don't know any Austrian economics. Why don't I just quit now? Don't think that. Do not think that. So, all right, but is it scary being in the oral exam? I mean, when you're Mr. First Place, I'm sure it probably isn't, but like, does it, do you seem like, you think people would be scared doing this?
I don't really need the mic, but I'd say it really depends on how comfortable you are at speaking economics, you know, talking economics. I mean, one thing I think that it really shows how well you know something is if you can speak it to others, if you can teach it. And I know teachers of any, it doesn't have to deal with economics at all, but it's how well you can articulate your ideas. So if you have a bunch of stuff jumbled in your brain, and even though you might be really bright, and you could deliberate on something, and you could take about, you know, it might take half an hour to get a reasoned response. That's not the type of, you know, the oral exam is different. I mean, it's really lightning fast. You know, they ask you a question, and you got to be on your toes. So it is one of those things. So if you're good at comfort public speaking, you're comfortable, and you can think, you know, rationally during something like that. You know, you can think coolly and calmly. Then, I mean, it can be something manageable, but. I mean, before anyone takes it, I'll be honest, I was nervous for the first time I took it. And, I mean, each time you do, because you never know what's going to happen.
So do you think there are some faculty members who are kind of tougher than others, or some that are kind of pushovers? Like, why don't you just tell us? Because what's going to happen is you'll be, if you get through to the oral part, we have three different exam rooms going at once, so we have time to examine everybody. And so you'll look and see which faculty members are going to be in your room. And there might be certain names that if you see them in your room, you say, don't. You know, like when you were trying to get your driver's license, you knew that there was one of the troopers was terrible. He's going to make you parallel park. Who's going to make you parallel park here at the Mises Institute?
Well, I do think actually they don't even post the teacher, the professor's names on at least
oh, they just post the student names.
Yeah, they just post the student
and then
names.
You walk in there and say, oh.
So half of it becomes an inside game as to figure out who's
that's
which
funny.
Place. Yeah. But I would have to say the toughest person without a doubt is Guido Holzman.
Yeah.
I mean he really drills the questions he asks you, and then he stares at you with this very stoic German face.
With a slight grin.
This grin, yes.
And you don't
grin.
Know if that means, have I made a fool of myself or am I awesome?
Yeah, before and after you, the question. So it can break the character of the most, you know, hard, fast men. But yeah, it's fun. He's definitely the hardest, I would say.
But he's not here this year.
Yeah, he's not here this year.
So the faculty, no applauding that. So the faculty, we're now talking to each other secretly about, so who's going to be Guido this year? Like, who's going to be the Guido? I don't know. I mean, I think you need to have a German accent to really be that intimidating. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. After Guido, I mean, he I always remembered was the toughest.
And he would ask questions that sometimes the rest of the faculty would not really always know what the answer was. But he said, well, look, we have to distinguish the best from the second best, right? We have to ask tough questions.
The good news is if I remember the rules right, whoever you have, if you go on to the second round, whoever the speaker, you know, who were testing you the first round, they can't ask you questions. in the second round.
Right. So the first, the first round would be like the written exam. Then you get to the oral.
Yeah,
they narrow that down. And then there's a final round where you're in a room with every faculty member, but the ones who have already examined you can't ask you anything. So if you get people you perceive as being tough in the first round, you're home free. They're not allowed to ask you anything anymore.
Yeah. So it works both ways. So, you know, you could have the tough guys, but if you go on, then you could be in a relatively better position. But yeah, the last round's especially intimidating because you have the whole faculty looking at you. This is this long round table. It's the tech room now, but yeah, it was this long round, like business table. You sit at the very end, and they all lean over.
Yeah.
They look at you, and you're kind of like.
Nice. Okay, so now you've also been a summer fellow here.
Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
Right. So was that useful to you? After the Institute has poured a lot of resources into you, did you find that useful?
Very, very enjoyable summer. Probably the two most enjoyable summers I've had in a while. Tremendously helpful. You're here and you research and you can write a few. You write a paper and you discuss with faculty and other fellows here and you pretty much in a sense it really is a consumption good because you're able to do if you're really interested in the academic stuff, you do what you love and it's a tremendous benefit to be able to do that, to be able to. Most of the time, most kids, college kids, they got to write a paper and, it's the end of the world. They write the paper, 5 hours before class. But, here, you really want to enjoy what you're doing. And I certainly do. It's a great time.
Nice. Yeah. All right. What else do you want to add about your time here? Or advice to them or anything?
The advice.
Or tell them what questions are on the exam. I think it's what they're really waiting for. Yeah.
Well, I do know they change it a while. The oral exam, the multiple choice questions, it's all on the basic lectures that everyone takes. So the special lectures that you take, you might take, you take the DiLorenzo session where, he talks about, political entrepreneurship and stuff. You know those questions, you just pretty much mainline, the hardcore,
for the written
economics.
And then in the oral, they can ask you about the breakout ones.
You submit which sessions you've been to, and then they ask you questions based on that. So, a question would pretty much be, someone would ask, how do you define inflation? So, I know Holzman would always ask this, so I could say Holzman's question, because, he won't be here. So you would answer, and then he would continue with it. So depending on how you answered that question, he would go on. So, if you gave, it's an increase in prices, it's not really how the Austrians would say it. He'd sort of engage you on that. If not, he'd say, okay, an increase in the money supply. If you go the Rothbard route, increase the money supply that was unbacked by gold. It all depends. So pretty much one question leads to another during the oral.
Yeah, and then when you get to the last round, it's anything goes. Yeah, we can ask you, because we got to see who really is the...